Hello, everybody.
Hi, it is Elsie
and Tiffany
back with a really awesome guest this week. We're so excited about. Yes, it's something that me and Tiffany, I feel like, don't really know much about, but we are really excited to learn from our special guest today. Tiffany, do you have any final words before we just go right into it?
No, I just want everybody to know right now that I am so pumped about what we're about to talk about. I feel like I talk about this a lot, but you know, I don't really know any specifics, like what we can do, but I feel like all of our questions about this one topic, which is a very fun, sometimes taboo topic, I feel like we're going to get all of the facts out of the way today. I'm excited.
Yes. So the person that we have today is specialized in psychedelic therapy. So his name is Ronan Levy that we have on the podcast today. So Ronan, you now have permission to enter. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And Elsie, I love how you kind of sung that note in your intro. I need to figure out how to do that kind of thing in my podcast.
Wait, what did I do?
I don't know exactly. I don't remember exactly what word it was, but you kind of like sung. It was nice. It was nice. I like that.
I just like to sing random words all the time. So it happens.
That's perfect.
She's got perfect pitch and tone and everything all the time.
I hate people like that.
I know. I've got all the great stuff to say, but my ass is so monotone. I'm just like,
I have nothing great to say, but I'm like, nee, nee, nee,
nee, nee. All, so it all sounds great.
Yeah, it's interesting.
No, I don't really have that much great to say.
But thank you so much for coming today. Like we said, this is a kind of topic that we are still learning about ourselves. So we are really, really excited to have you on to kind of help us navigate through kind of like a, you know, beginner's guide. We were saying before this podcast, Tiffany said it's advanced for dummies, kind of, which I thought was really funny. overview of psychedelic therapy. So
yeah, maybe debunk some standard myths, because I know there's a ton of just taboo myths lurking out there, mostly I think because of Coachella and all of our fun festivals. But right. I think that psychedelics in general can be a super beneficial and helpful thing for anybody that needs it, or anybody. I think it does a really good job of getting, based off what I've said, Ronan, I may be completely wrong, but it helps you get in touch maybe a little bit more with your own self.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I would posit, and of course I'm not exactly objective here, but I would posit that psychedelics are good for even people who don't need them, you know, and that's not just me opining. You gotta remember, I grew up as a straight edge kid, pretty much. I didn't drink. I didn't do drugs. I didn't do anything. Like, I discovered the joys of alcohol around the age of 20, which maybe isn't crazy in the US, but my guess is most people dabble well before that in the US. You know, the drinking age in the US is 21. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I was very, very anti-drug initially, then agnostic. And then only later in life did I start exploring with cannabis and psychedelics. And that's what's opened me up to this conversation. But what I've learned is just about everything you may have been taught in high school about drugs, like this is your brain on drugs, isn't probably a gross exaggeration or an outright lie. And so it's really interesting, and it's really exciting, because what psychedelic assisted therapy is, what's happening right now, is just taking conventional therapy in the most layman sense of the word, and using psychedelic drugs to basically turbocharge it, right? Like, it's kind of like drinking protein powder before going to the gym, or a more easy analogy, even though it's not a good one, is like taking steroids before you go to the gym. That's kind of what you're doing, like with psychedelics, but there's not nearly as many risks or harms with psychedelics as there are with steroids. But that's the kind of easiest way to think about it. And if you think that therapy is good for everybody, and I would argue that every single person on the planet should do some therapy in their life, then if you just think about psychedelics as being turbocharged therapy, then it really is for a lot of people, whether you're depressed or anxious or have PTSD, or whether you don't and just want to feel things more or be more creative or just see things from a different perspective. I think psychedelic therapies have a lot of potential to do a lot of good in this world.
That's so cool. I agree.
So cool. So when you're talking about, you mentioned cannabis, so like, you specifically specialize in psychedelic therapy. Do you believe in all plant-based medicines, or do you just specifically think that psychedelics in general are the most helpful for the brain therapeutic purposes?
That's a good question. No one's asked me that before. I wouldn't say I believe in all plant-based medicines. I believe in some. You know, I am very open-minded, but I think everything we do has to be grounded in some sort of evidence and data. So that doesn't mean that there's not spiritual components of life. I'm a big spiritual person in many respects. I've got, you know, my crystals sitting here with me and all that kind of stuff, but I got a full altar
right behind here.
Yeah. But we're focused on science, and my introduction to cannabis, speaking of that, for example, myself and Joseph and Hanan and Ryan, four of the five co-founders in Field Trip, the company doing all this work with psychedelics, we were very active in the Canadian medical cannabis industry starting in 2013, 2014. We built the largest network of cannabis specialized medical clinics in Canada, sold it to a company called Aurora Cannabis, which grew to become one of the largest global cannabis companies in the world. Not bad for at that time. I had tried cannabis for like maybe five times in my life. Joseph had never tried cannabis in his life, and Hannah had maybe tried it a handful of times. So we came in pretty agnostic to like, is there therapeutic potential here? We had no real opinion on that. We were just aspiring entrepreneurs who saw an opportunity to do something in what we thought would be a big space. What happened though with our success in building out these cannabis clinics is we helped a lot of people. You know, we heard consistently, we were treating really sick people. You know, the first thing we focused on doing was not being like a Venice Beach doctor who was just writing prescriptions to anybody who had $50 and a knee ache. We were focused on doing good medicine. And so the people who were in our clinics were sick. They were genuinely suffering with various chronic conditions. And almost uniformly, they came back and they're like, it's changed my life. Sometimes it was just like, it didn't do anything for my back pain, but I slept through the night for the first time in 7 years. And that's made a world of difference to me. And so that changed our whole thinking about cannabis. And I've done a lot of work with therapy and coaching and all that kind of stuff, just for my own reasons. And so after we left the cannabis industry and learned about what was going on with psychedelics, which was really coming out of academic institutions and universities, it wasn't grassroots activists doing it like with cannabis. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It was just coming from a different place. And we looked at the science, we're like, oh my God, like if we thought we had impact with cannabis, and we really did, the impact potential with psychedelics is so much greater than it is with cannabis, that we couldn't help but get excited by it.
So I think it is exciting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. When I say, or when you say psychedelics, then what exactly, like what kinds of psychedelics are you talking about?
You know, that's not actually as simple a question as you may think. You know, philosophically at Field Trip, we think psychedelics are anything that quiets the ego, that slows down the ego. The ego is the best way to think about it. If you're not familiar with Freudian psychology, it's the part of you that kind of gives you a sense of self, a sense of identity, and kind of restricts you from changing. Like, you know, anytime you feel dread going into a situation, it's kind of like your ego saying like, don't go in here. You're perfectly fine as you are. You don't need to change. You know, that's the ego. So anything that kind of quiets that a little bit, or in a more neurological sense, slows the default mode network. The default mode network are parts of your brain that are kind of operating when you're not operating. So it's the part of your brain that keeps your heart beating or, you know, you alive. That's where the ego resides. So if it quiets the default mode network, not in a way that's going to stop your heart or anything along those lines, but just lowers your defenses so you can be more receptive to the effects of therapy, that's psychedelic. So in our mind, that can be classic psychedelic drugs like LSD or psilocybin or DMT. It can be MDMA, which isn't classically a psychedelic. It can be ketamine, which is what we use in our clinics now because it is a legal approved psychedelic in Canada and the US. But it can also be breathwork. You know, I don't know if either of you have tried breathwork, but even different breathing techniques can get you into a psychedelic state.
100%.
Cannabis can do it. Meditation can do it. So it can be any of those. But when we typically talk about what's happening right now from the sort of scientific and medical zeitgeist, we're talking about psilocybin, magic mushrooms. We're talking about MDMA or more commonly known as ecstasy, as well as LSD. Those are the three getting the primary focus right now. And of course, ketamine, because that's what we're using.
Okay.
So
you can go ahead. We have a lot of questions.
We just both have so many questions. So I know that you guys are in a specific handful of big cities. So we're talking like Atlanta, was it Dallas I saw on there?
Houston.
Houston.
LA, Chicago, Toronto. Yeah, I have a list.
Okay. So in those specific cities, I just have a more like logistical question before we get into any and basics Atlanta. Of like psychedelics. Yeah. So if those things, like some of the options aren't legal, like are you able to give a prescription for something that wouldn't be legal in those cities? Like, how do you actually navigate that? Because like MDMA, I feel like is not, maybe I'm wrong. I feel like this is something I usually
I'm
have
not
had
up to date.
Buy on the DL at a festival. That's not really something that you can get at, you know, your local grocery store.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. Yeah. No. So psilocybin and MDMA and LSD are still Schedule I drugs in the US or Schedule III in Canada. But they're being studied. So a lot of the research that we're talking about and a lot of the excitement is in either clinical trials. Right now, there is a phase 3 FDA-approved clinical trial looking at MDMA-assisted therapy for the treatment of PTSD. So within, call it 2 years, we're very likely to see MDMA as something that a doctor can prescribe legally for the treatment of PTSD. There's clinical trials in phase 2B for psilocybin. So probably 3 to 5 years away before that becomes prescribable. But right now in every city across North America, you can work with ketamine. Ketamine is a FDA approved and it's approved as an anesthetic. So it can be used as a pain reliever or for surgery purposes. Mm-hmm. It's been approved since 1970. It got a bit of a bad rap because most people think of horse tranquilizer or party drug.
Yeah. I would think of, and correct me if I'm wrong, I just associate ketamines with Hugh Hefner. And like, I just feel like isn't that the stuff that he gave all the bunnies to like make them pass out and have sex with him? I don't know. Maybe I'm
I didn't even know
off here, but I feel like that is the thing. Like, I remember it being a joke that he would give them like vodka and ketamines. I don't know. Maybe I heard in a rap song. I'm not sure.
You hear that in a rap song one time.
Must be totally legit if it came out of a rap song.
I could be totally wrong about that. I thought that.
Yeah, I mean, again, ketamine is an anesthetic. As far as it is as a drug, as a medicine, it's extremely safe. So you can take a large dose of ketamine and not risk overdosing. That's not true about other anesthetics because other anesthetics actually like depress your CNS. So it can stop you from breathing. Ketamine, that's not really a risk. It's actually remarkably safe. It's one of the most, even the World Health Organization recognized ketamine as an essential drug around the world. Because if you have children and your kid breaks their arm and you go to the emergency room and the doctor's like, oh, we need to, you know, reset the arm, odds are they'll give your child ketamine as opposed to other anesthetics because it's that safe. It is actually remarkably safe as a drug, generally non-addictive. You can get addicted to ketamine, but it's not that addictive and it's low risk. So there's very little likelihood that you're going to overdose. But what happened was, ketamine was being used as an anesthetic about 20 years ago in its approved purpose. And researchers noticed that people who had received ketamine as an anesthetic reported significant improvements in their mental health. It was just really coincidental. So researchers started digging into that and they found that ketamine just by itself, not even as part of psychedelic assisted therapy, but just as an antidepressant, is very effective. So much so that the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, Dr. Tom Insel, said that ketamine is the most important development in the treatment of antidepressant in decades. And he said that about 5 or 10 years ago. That's how exciting this research is.
Wow.
And so that is what we're using at field trips. So instead of using ketamine as just an antidepressant where you get an IV, sit there for 3 hours and you feel better for a while, when provided in small but sort of immediate onset doses, so we provide it intramuscularly, so it's just like a small needle, but it has high bioavailability. People have a psychedelic experience. You know, they report like out of body sensations. They report being able to look at past experiences from a different light. So they get this immediate lift because it is an immediate or fast acting antidepressant. But then they get the sense that they get the space to see their world differently. And that's why psychedelic therapies, whether it's ketamine or psilocybin or MDMA, seem to work so well, is that three things seem to happen. One is people feel better because they're rapid acting antidepressants. Two, it gives people space to kind of look back at their past experiences or past traumas or whatever's going on in their lives and just see it from a different lens. You know, there's an article that came out that looked at what happens in the brain when you've taken LSD. And basically what happens with your brain, it looks a lot more like a child's brain. The parts of your brain that stop talking to each other as you grow up start talking to each other again. That's why people have synesthesia. That's why people report like feeling music more intensely, or, you know, seeing sounds or feeling colors or all these kind of things.
Right.
It's because they're actually feeling that. It's because parts of your brain are connecting in a way that didn't connect before. So what happens during a psychedelic experience is you feel better almost immediately. You get the space to see things from a different perspective and start the emotional processing exactly like you would get to in conventional therapy. But instead of taking years to get there, you get there in a matter of hours with psychedelics. And so you get the emotional processing of conventional therapy. And then really excitingly, and this is where something called integration really matters, is following a psychedelic experience with ketamine and psilocybin and presumably other psychedelics as well, we've actually seen that your brain starts to regrow neural synapses. So the connections between your brain cells start to regrow. And there's a period of neuroplasticity where those rigid mental models we get as adults that make it harder for us to change. You know how children can adopt new languages and new skills like that, whereas us old folks,
we're not malleable at all.
We're not malleable. You have a period of malleability following a psychedelic experience. So, you know, if you just need to make lifestyle changes, like, you got to start going to the gym. I'm just using this as a very simple example. People can actually make the habit of going to the gym much more easier to adopt following a psychedelic experience than without it. So you kind of got these three things happening at once.
It like takes you back to that spongy period almost. Like, you know, they say kids' brains are like sponges. So they, whatever it's molded into, they're kind of taking it on. They're resilient. They're not questioning everything. On a more basic level, like a spiritual person would just say their sense of self, they're more connected to the self than, you know, like an egoic person is very attached to what they've learned on a society basis. So I think that what you're saying is like, you're just kind of, you're getting back to the self, your true self, and you're picking up from there, which kind of sounds like what would be a dream for anybody who has dealt with depression or anxiety their entire life.
I think that's the ultimate journey. I would say following a psychedelic experience, you're just giving yourself the space to reconnect with your true self and work towards getting rid of that shame, those anxieties, those experiences that have kind of locked you into your current worldview. So it's unfortunately, it's not a magic pill. I mean, it unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, it's very active therapy, right? It's not like you take a pill and it's magically better. You got to do the work. I like to liken field trip to the Home Depot for mental health, which is you can do it. We're here to help, but there's work involved. But yeah, ultimately that's the goal is that you kind of reconnect to with who you really want to be or who you were born to be.
That's awesome. Well, so when you do one of these therapy sessions, kind of take us through what it's like. So you know,
walk
it sounds
door.
Like, yeah, you walk in the door, you get, I'm guessing you get, it sounds like you get a shot of this ketamine. And then this might be a dumb question.
Hold on, let's rewind. Like even before that, like if you're just having a conversation with somebody, you set your appointment. I'm just like specifically, I want to know all the details. Like you walk in the door, you talk to somebody, you're like, I'm not sure. Do you need to have when you go into field trip, is it specifically for people who are having issues? I know in the beginning you said that it is good for a multitude of people or everyone. When you go into field trip, is this something that anybody can go in and they just want to become a better version of themselves? Or do you need to have like some sort of prerequisite or referral before you get into field trip?
So the comments earlier were my belief. Right now, my belief and society are not quite aligned. I think we will get there. Right now, we need to have medical needs. So to take you through the entire process, and medical need is really defined by each jurisdiction. So for example, in Ontario, where I am right now, the guidance from the College of Physicians says ketamine-assisted therapy should only be used as a third-line agent, which means you'd have to have tried conventional antidepressants and therapy, or, you know, two different approaches, found it unsatisfactory, then you can try it. In states like California, it can be a first line agent. You can go straight to ketamine assisted therapy, and it doesn't have to be treatment resistant. You could be dysthymic or just, you know, having a tough time. So it's jurisdiction by jurisdiction. And so what happens in field trip, and again, a lot of this has been informed by what we saw in the cannabis industry, but what one of the things I think that made us so successful in the cannabis industry is that we're focused on doing good medicine, doing it in a way that the rest of the medical community could get behind and say like, oh, that is real medicine. This isn't people just trying to get people high. They're really focused right, on therapeutic outcomes to make sure ketamine-assisted therapy is appropriate. By and large, ketamine-assisted therapy is generally safe, but it's not for everyone. There are certain contraindications. Certainly if you're pregnant or nursing, it's probably not appropriate. If you have uncontrolled high blood pressure, it's probably not appropriate. Not that it can't be, but when you're doing the risk-benefit analysis, you know, the doctor has to make a determination. People with schizophrenia or other mental health challenges where their grip on objective reality is tenuous, it's probably not appropriate. Outside of that, by and large, most people will qualify for ketamine-assisted therapy, at least on the psychiatric screening. Then we'll do a medical evaluation as well, because again, there are certain contraindications. Like I said, uncontrolled heart, high blood pressure could be a problem. So we just want to screen. Assuming everything looks good, you would connect with your therapist or your therapeutic team, get to know them, because it's a therapeutic relationship. It's not like you want to go in and have a conversation with a total stranger, because right, what we do know from all the evidence and studies with psychedelic therapies is that set and setting matter. Set and setting, meaning the mindset or the preparatory work that you do before a psychedelic experience, and the setting, the actual place where you do it. So you don't want to be doing this in a hospital setting with white walls and fluorescent lights and a whole bunch of frenetic energy around that probably is going to lead to an unpleasant experience. So you connect with your therapeutic team, you know, develop that rapport. Then a few days later, you'd come in for your first dosing session. We call it a ketamine exploratory session. So come in, you get comfortable. You know, we help try to help people ground, whether it's through breathing exercises or whatever, just trying to get in the right headspace. You come into one of our dosing rooms, and if you want to see what one of our clinics looks like, visit fieldtriphealth.com. We really spend a lot of time making these places feel very safe. It looks more like a bohemian chic apartment than
awesome.
A doctor's office.
Yeah, I would love my apartment to be decorated like that.
Yeah, me too.
I know in Atlanta they have like little moss walls. Just like, I love that. I just want to go in there and hang out.
Every one of our clinics, that's one of our signature things, is we have a moss wall in every one of our clinics.
I love that.
So you go into one of the dosing rooms. We've got anti-gravity chairs. You put on a weighted blanket. You get noise-canceling headphones. You put on eye shades.
Nice. This sounds like my bedtime routine.
I would love to do that, yeah.
It's not so bad, eh?
Just minus the ketamine and add in whatever else.
The ketamine is administered, you know, it's usually a small dose, but because it's done through an intramuscular injection, it comes on very quickly. And we want that. We want people to have as psychedelic an experience as possible with a very small dose of ketamine. That's kind of the math we're trying to achieve. And then you're under the influence of the ketamine, which you're not unconscious. You're very much conscious, but because you have the eye mask on and your earphones on, you go inwards. And have the experience. And usually people report being able to revisit things. Coming out the other side about an hour and a half later, you have an opportunity to debrief with your therapist. Just talk about what happened. It's not very intense therapy. It's just, you know, what did you see? What did you feel? Did anything of particular significance come up for you? And then over a course of treatment, what you would do is you do that twice, ideally over a couple of days. So, you know, if it was a Monday and then a Thursday, you did the ketamine exploratory sessions. Then on the following Monday, we would do an integration session. So during the integration session, there's no drugs involved. It's just a more conventional cognitive behavioral therapy where we take all the insights and awareness that came out of your ketamine exploratory sessions and really turn them into action, you know, using techniques like motivational interviewing or behavioral activation, really trying to help people make mindset changes and lifestyle changes to support the antidepressant lift they got naturally from the ketamine. And then you do that is a one module, like two ketamine exploratory, one integration. And typically people do two or three modules over the course of a month or 6 weeks as one treatment program. And then, you know, hopefully weeks or months later, if they find themselves starting to slip back into old habits, they would come back for, you know, a maintenance dose or a booster session, just trying to keep them, you know, feeling good and yeah. keep doing the work.
So is there no major like crash with it either? Cause I've heard with, I mean, I've honestly never really tried psychedelics at all, but like cannabis is about as far as I've gone, but I want to know, like, I mean, cause I've always just heard that I would like, you know, I mean, I'm thinking more probably like cocaine or something like that, but I feel like from what I've heard, it's like, there's this high and then there's a crash. So does anyone, do people experience that at all? Or is it more like a, you kind of come down and you're in a safe, like a more level headed, I know you'll come down from it eventually. You're not just going to go around and act like you're on ketamine all the time, but.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard about anything, anybody having a crash, at least with ketamine right now, the doses are small enough that mm-hmm. it's not likely. I have heard that with MDMA, it's possible because, you know, there's a serotonin crash afterwards. But what I've heard is that most of the time that's a result of street drugs and what it's been cut with, not necessarily mm-hmm. MDMA. No, I haven't heard of too many crashes. And I think in part, it's also because of the container in which you're doing this. You're doing this with a therapist. You're not at a rave getting super dehydrated, you know, and right. partying all night. You're
probably also drinking at the same time.
Exactly. So like I said, I haven't heard of any significant crashes following it, but that's mm-hmm. just based on my N of one data mm-hmm. point. So, mm-hmm.
and so when you were in this hour and a half while you're kind of in that ketamine space, is it like a therapy session then, or are you just kind of sitting with the headphones and in your space and kind of just doing, do you walk around or like, I mean,
walking around in your head,
touch the moss wall, you know, like what are you doing when this happens?
You stay in the particular dosing room. You don't wander around. Whether you want to be interactive with the therapist is really what's right for you. Okay. We generally encourage people to stay inward, you know, and just let what comes up come up, because, you know, you're in control. Like you're still under the influence, but if you want to sit up and go to the washroom, you still very much have the capacity to do that. But when you go in, inward, that's when I think the real insights and magic, for lack of a better term, starts to happen. So, right. but it really is like, if you want to be very conversational with your therapist, that's awesome. You can do that too.
So someone is in there to kind of help guide you if you need it.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yep. So after these two or three modules that people have done over the course of a month, 6 weeks, what are people reporting overall? Like, are you seeing significant changes from on a scale, like a tangible, they were at a level 4 depression before, and then they walked out of it, and then they're a level 8, and then they just need maintenance sessions, you know, every 6 months or something. Is there something that, you know, you can attach to, like how they're actually saying they're feeling versus how they started?
Yeah, absolutely. So, before every session, as well as after, I think, I don't remember the exact process, but our patients complete the GAD-7 and the PHQ-9, which are the sort of objective questionnaires to determine whether someone's depressed or anxious. And what we've seen, and we published a white paper on our first cohort of patients, was that across the board, we saw people go from moderately to severely depressed to, you know, below mild or mild depression that seemed to sustain for at least a month or longer. You know, our first clinic opened just about a year ago in Toronto. So it hasn't been such a long time that we have a big radius of data to work with, but objectively and subjectively, we're seeing really fantastic results. You know, beyond the objective kind of data, which is very impressive, we hear stories about, you know, a survivor of sexual trauma reporting that she looked in the mirror and saw herself as being beautiful for the first time that she could remember. We've had a military veteran who reported feeling empathy for the first time since he served in theater kind of stuff. So really, really powerful stuff. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And when you said, you know, like even a month, somebody who has dealt with depression their entire lives, like a month of not feeling severely depressed is a lifetime. I could imagine how much of a gift that is to somebody who is probably suffering day in and day out. Just to give them even a month break is like a godsend, for lack of a better word, whatever you believe in. It's amazing. I think that what that relief period, even without the maintenance, is giving, I think that's really awesome and super exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, what I like about it too, and going back to that Home Depot example, is that it's experiential medicine. This is not medicine where you take the pill and the pill does the work. What we're actually doing is giving people the tools to hopefully be proactive about this. So it's not just about making them not depressed. It's actually about, you know, helping them live the life they want. So in the future, they don't get depressed, because even though there are numerous comorbidities and causes of depression, we do know that people who live healthy lifestyles tend to have better mental health. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy to get started, but once you've ingrained that into your habits and your routine, whether that's exercise or eating well or meditating or journaling or all of these different habits, we enable people and we support people and we give them the similarly the cognitive tools. So like, oh, I see this pattern and this is how I got out of that pattern beforehand. I can figure this out on my own. Maybe I don't need a maintenance dose. Maybe I just need to sit down and work through this. And so it's actually equipping people with the skill set to, you know, have more sustainable mental health, I guess, for That's lack amazing. Of a better term.
Yeah. I like love a
big,
that.
Like a big mindset shift, I guess.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And so how do you determine, I guess, how are you determining whether someone needs like more of a breath work kind of therapy or maybe more of like therapy with the ketamine and stuff?
So right now, even though philosophically we think psychedelic involves numerous potential options, in our clinics, we mm-hmm. only provide ketamine-assisted therapy. Okay. We're not doing breath work. That being said, we do have an app because as we saw cities like Denver and Oakland and Ann Arbor and numerous other states across the U.S. decriminalize psychedelics, we realized that there was going to be a whole bunch of people dabbling. You know, and so we realized that all of the tools that we've built for our clinics can actually be simplified and synthesized and put into an app. So even though we're not encouraging anyone to go out and do mushrooms, if you are going to go out and do mushrooms by yourself, you know, here's a tool that helps you set an intention. It provides you with music designed to support an experience. It helps you with reflections afterwards. So that app is called Trip. And so on that app, there are some breathwork videos. So if you did want to do a breathwork session, you can do it through that.
Oh, wow.
I'm getting that. Okay. So I know that you're not saying that you should go find illegal mushrooms, like street mushrooms, because I know there's a plethora of ones. I actually recently I've never tried mushrooms, but I've always wanted to. And because somebody had them, but because they couldn't tell me that if they were psilocybin or, am I saying that right?
Psilocybin.
I knew that was the one that I wanted to try. And so because they couldn't tell me like exactly what it was, I was like, no, I can't do that. Cause you know, I'm trying to grow this mind here. I can't just be trying all these crazy things and it not be a great experience. So if somebody were to try to get these psychedelics on just a basic street level, is there a guide? I know you're not condoning this. So I know you might not even be able to tell me any specifics.
Tiffany's like, where can we get drugs?
Who should we call? Like, what should you be looking for? Are there any things, any specifics like you can ask for, you know, your standard kind of thing?
I'm actually not very equipped to answer that question. I can tell you, at least in Canada, there are numerous online stores openly selling mushrooms, even though they're illegal. I think Canada's pretty open-minded, but I've heard in California, in Michigan, there are lots of online stores popping up and selling mushrooms. Now, how do you know they're legit or not? I have no idea, but we're not talking about dark web websites. We're talking about HTTPS kind of like on the world wide web. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's some comfort there. And there's also, I know there's other sites that are now, you know, rating all of these online dispensaries of mushrooms. So you can get maybe some comfort from that. But beyond that, I don't have any great advice. My first experience with mushrooms was received from a friend of mine who had a very trusted supplier. My second one was from a friend of mine who grew them themselves. And so otherwise I'd probably have that same anxiety that you have. So it's.
So what you're saying is, just trust your source, Google the source, and then you're going to be fine. I know you're really not saying that.
No,
but that's fine.
If you're choosing to go down that path, then make sure you trust your source that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
On a personal question really fast. Mm-hmm. Have you personally done any modules like with the ketamine assisted therapies. Have you taken any, gone through the steps yourself, or have you just looked at it from the outside perspective?
Sent Is that too personal into the question? Five? No, I'm perfectly happy to answer that. No, I have not. And that's simply because our first clinic opened in Toronto, which is where I'm based, in the midst of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I haven't left Canada since then. And we know that in Canada, only patients, or the guidance is only people who are treatment resistant depression or treatment resistant mental health patients, mm-hmm. which I'm very fortunate to say that I'm not a treatment resistant mental health patient. I don't mm-hmm. qualify for treatment at our own clinic. That being said, before we started down this path back in 2018 and we learned about what was happening, particularly with psilocybin, I thought it would be disingenuous to go out and you know, promote the availability of these therapies without having tried it myself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, have had a number of psychedelic experiences mm-hmm. since we started down this path. Because I want to feel confident in what we're doing, with B, because mm-hmm. I find them very powerful. They're very, very, you know, really amazing experiences. There was one study looking at psilocybin for tobacco addiction, smoking cessation, and they found, and I'm going to misquote the exact results, but the understanding is still the same, that something like 75% of respondents or participants reported a significant decrease in their tobacco consumption, but 80% of the respondents reported that their psilocybin experience was amongst the top five most meaningful experiences of their lives, up there with the birth of a child or marriage or anything along those lines. So these are really profoundly moving experiences.
That's what I've always heard too from people I know who have done this. They're always like, it is literally in life-changing in the best way. Like I know a lot of them aren't like addictive, but it's almost like, I mean, I never have heard of anyone I know at least getting addicted to those kinds of things. I mean, I'm sure there's some, like, if you're not doing it in a way that's like actually, it's, you know, laced with other stuff, maybe it can be addictive. But I mean, you kind of touched on this a little bit about this, you know, tobacco, but would you recommend this therapy? I mean, it probably differs from person to person, but would you just blanket kind of overall just recommend this therapy for someone with addiction, or is that kind of a little more risky, or how does that work?
The answer is yes, with a caveat that at least with ketamine, it's not well studied. We're starting to open up our treatments to include people with certain addictions, but we're going to start with addictions that typically are not drug related addictions. So, you know, eating disorders or social media addictions or things, because it certainly, and I can understand that there'd potentially be a public backlash of, why are you treating one addiction, like one drug addiction, with another drug addiction?
Right.
That being said, a lot of the early research into psychedelics was on addiction. In fact, the founder of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't remember his name, unfortunately, off the top of my head, he was inspired to create Alcoholics Anonymous after having an LSD experience in Saskatchewan in Canada to help with his own drinking addiction. So, so a lot of the early research was in psychedelics for addiction, and it is ongoing. In fact, one of the big clinical trials that's about to start by a company called Cybin is looking at a form of psilocybin for alcohol use disorder. So we're in our clinics, we're starting to wade into looking at psychedelics for, or ketamine for, the treatment of addictions and helping people break addictions.
Wow. That's awesome.
So I was going to say something super quick about what you had mentioned earlier. Are you familiar with Ben Greenfield? He talks a lot about psychedelics. I don't know if you ever listened to any of his podcasts or anything.
Yeah, no, Ben's a buddy of mine. He's been on the podcast.
And, shut up.
Yeah. I was going to say, I would
fangirl so hard. I'm like an OG Ben Greenfield fan. I guess it makes sense now because he is really in that world of psychedelics and plant-based medicine. So I listened to his podcast a lot, and he was talking about psilocybin. Why can I not get this the correct
way? I got it wrong so many times in the early days. Psilocybin.
So he was just basically describing, like, you know, when I first asked you if you had done anything in the psychedelic realm before, and you mentioned that you had done it a couple of times. Well, Ben was saying that, you know, like, even the most prominent shamans that are the highest up in the order, have only done some of these psychedelics one or two times, because they're not meant to be like used and abused every single month. It's not like you're trying these things and you're getting, you're, you know, having to keep up with them all the time. It's you try them, you get the experience, and then you're able to pass on the experience. So like when you were explaining that you didn't want to tell people that you've done it or explain the experience without actually doing it yourself, I want people to kind of understand also that just because you haven't done it a lot of times doesn't necessarily mean that it's not as meaningful, as impactful. Because I think that in this psychedelic realm, I'm not the expert, but from what it sounds like, from what everybody says, it only takes taking that journey, you know, a couple of times to really get into a different connection with yourself.
That's right. I mean, again, with most psychedelics, at least tryptamine, so LSD, psilocybin, DMT, MDMA is a little bit different, and ketamine is a little bit different, but they're generally non-addictive. It's almost impossible to get addicted to them because they stop working. If they take them every day too much, you just don't feel anything, but it doesn't create a physical dependency. I can tell you after my first big dose of psilocybin, which was 4 grams, which isn't big compared to Ben Greenfield. He does that like for a microdose. That really? Guy's intense. Oh my God. Yeah. You know, I had no desire whatsoever to touch mushrooms for months afterwards. Like it's intense, you know, after like the day after, like, you know, it's a very positive experience, but you feel drained. It is a very intense, physically intense, because I mean, you know, I can't remember exactly what the number is, but your brain uses up a lot of the calories in your body, right? So when your brain's working that hard, working through all that stuff, afterwards you're very much drained. You don't want to do it again anytime soon. And so, yeah, that's exactly right. And I don't know if you know who Alex Icahn is. He's the guy, one of the guys who created the 5-minute journal. If you've heard of the 5-minute journal.
Yeah, I do it every day.
I've heard of the journal.
If there is a thing that has to do with like spirituality or mindset, I probably have done it and are probably doing it. I think I do too many things.
I don't think so, but Alex, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I got to give a shout out to my buddy, Jason Gaynard, who runs a mastermind talks, because I count like Alex and Ben as friends of mine, all thanks to Jason. He's like a super connector and he's one of the world's best people, but Alex is also a friend of mine. I actually owe him a WhatsApp message. Thanks for the reminder. But you know, he told the story, he came on my podcast and he did ayahuasca once and he's like, I've had no desire to do psychedelics ever again. I got what I needed out of that session and I just don't need to do it again. He's like, I'm just done with it. Now,
yeah.
I think Alex is a unique case because personal growth is a lifelong journey. And I think psychedelics, even if you don't do them regularly, can be useful to punctuate your personal growth and accelerate it. But maybe that's the case, and wonderful if that's the case for Alex. And it's wonderful if you try psychedelics once, get everything you need and never have to go back. That's awesome too. It's just, I don't think it reflects most people.
Yeah. I almost tried ayahuasca in Tulum. I was dead set I was going to do it. So, you know, they say like, if you're wanting to do ayahuasca or something in that realm, you can't actively seek, this could be totally wrong. You can't actively seek a shaman in those areas because then it's like, you're never going to have the experience you're supposed to have. It's supposed to be like a very organic, like you run into the shaman that you're going to use like in the taxi. And then, you know, just like it happens. Like that's what they say. I don't know if that's actually true, but everybody that has ever had the experience with a really good shaman with like street ayahuasca in a country that allows you to do it, it's usually been, if you actively seek it out, it's usually not a great experience or it's not necessarily something real. So I think usually if they're marketing it or you're trying to find it, it might not be the greatest experience. And this could be totally wrong. I'm not 100% because I'm obviously not a shaman or well-versed in any of these things. But I do know that there are lots of different experiences with ayahuasca just because I think that there isn't like the formula isn't the same across the board. So everybody has a different experience or sometimes no experience or sometimes they're just throwing up the entire time. So they don't have anything to say afterwards besides I would never do that again.
Go ahead.
Isn't like Peru or somewhere in Brazil, Costa Rica, like those kinds of things. I've always heard if you're going to do ayahuasca, do it there. I've never been to any of those places, so I haven't done it. But like, I've always just heard, I've never really heard like, you have to let the shaman find you.
I've never heard that either.
I think maybe one guy told me that one day and I ran with it.
Like these street shamans. I mean, I don't know. Someone came up to me in the streets in a foreign country and was like, hey, you want to try some ayahuasca? I'd be like, no.
That'd be a fucking dream for me. No, I would be like, yes, please take me.
No, but what if it's not? I'd be too scared that it's like some person trying to like drug me and like kill me or something. I don't know. So, I mean, even in the U.S., especially in the U.S., actually, if that happened, I'd be like, no.
Well, I'm putting it to the universe right now. If a shaman walks up to me and asks me to take ayahuasca, I'm doing it.
That's literally like telling your Tiffany as a mom, would you like, that's like if Eliza, your daughter, just went up to someone who was like, hey, little girl, want some candy? That's that. So,
well, I'd say trust your gut.
I'm like, I gotta see some ID. Let me see some of your certifications.
I don't think shamans are walking around like they like roll their scroll out and they're like, see, mm-hmm.
Whatever. Anyway,
okay, we took this over.
I think that's okay. I think the best way to do it is like if you know someone who's done it that you trust, who had a good experience, ask for an introduction. I'll see if I can. I know Ben has done some ayahuasca, so I'll ask Ben for whoever, you know, see if I can connect you with some peeps.
What? Tiffany, that is a dream. Any drug that Ben connects her with.
Yes. If either one of you two, you're up there with Ben now. You're right on there. Based off this conversation, I have been like a kid in a candy store listening to you. I could listen to this stuff all day long. Like if you say neuroplasticity, I'm like done. I'm sold.
If you say what to me?
Neuroplasticity.
Ah, that's a,
if you that's say a that question. In a sentence, I love you. That's it. We're done.
I'll see what I can do. I can't do it now because you're looking for it. So I'm like the ayahuasca shaman right now.
Yeah.
Oh, you already said it.
That's
you
true.
Said it already.
Oh, yeah.
You
did.
Yeah. When he's, I was like, that's my WAP. That's my go-to word right
oh
there.
Oh my God.
I'm just kidding. Seriously.
God. Well, I mean, have you done ayahuasca or is that one that you haven't? Okay.
No, I haven't. Not opposed to it, but if I'm going to do it, I'd probably go to, I'd want to do it, you know, go down to the jungle and do it in like as authentic experience as possible. For me, I mean, I've got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and the 2-year-old was kind of just on his way when we started getting into this. So taking time away, going down to Peru for a week to get really, really high.
not a priority.
not a priority. And I think ayahuasca is wonderful. But it's for people who just want a spiritual awakening, right? There's not really great integration work, I think, associated with most ayahuasca experiences. You're not going to get into like the crux of it. Maybe you will, but from what I've heard, it's like people have a great positive experience. They see the world in a new light. They start to understand things, but it's probably less therapeutic and more spiritual in its utility. Right. That's not a hard statement. Mm-hmm. But I've been focused more, especially given where I am in life and young kids and all that kind of stuff. If I'm going to do psychedelics, it's going to be a one day thing. And then I want to get back to my family and
for sure.
But in the future, I'd be happy to try out ayahuasca for sure. And the comment about like, it's a brew, right? So the active ingredient in ayahuasca is DMT. Our body actually synthesizes DMT naturally. It naturally exists inside you. In fact, one theory is that the white light and the experience of dying that people have is actually your body being flooded by DMT. But DMT is not orally available. You can't just take a DMT pill. Your body will break it down in the digestive process. So what happens is when you mix, you know, the different roots or vines in ayahuasca, something from one of the vines stops, kind of protects the DMT. So when you ingest it orally,
it's like a blocker.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why it's going to be a different experience every time, because there's going to be different brews. And as a natural product, certainly we know this from cannabis, one batch to the next, it's almost impossible to provide consistency in that.
Right.
Wow.
And that actually makes a lot of sense just like going into it. I think a lot of people that have really good experiences with it probably have the mental foundation, the mindset that they need, because like they're on that journey, they're doing the work, and then it just overall is a better experience. If you're going into it, I know a lot of, I've watched documentaries. If you're going into it and you're eating all the meat and doing all the things and you're, you know, in your traffic and you're like screaming at people, I don't think it's necessarily going to be a great experience for you, because you're just not in a mindset to have that growth that is given to you in that time frame. So I think that's different than obviously in very handheld therapeutics like ketamine therapeutics, where you're setting up the setting, you're walking them through it, and then you are like debriefing at the end, which is a totally different experience, obviously, than somebody who just walks on the street and drinks the brew.
Knocks it back, yeah.
Finds a shaman in a taxi, like Tiffany's about to do.
So guys, don't do what I am saying. Obviously, I don't know the things.
Yeah,
that's why we're here, learning the new ones.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I want you to get a chance, obviously, to like kind of, I know you talked about the app and you know, your podcast, all that. I want you to kind of, you know, tell people where they can find you, what you have going on right now, all that good stuff.
All the things. Is there anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap it up?
I'm happy to talk a bit about Field Trip and talk about all the cool stuff we're doing, because I think it's really exciting. But before I do that, if there are any questions you feel like you didn't get answered, to the extent that my, you know, somewhat accurate, but probably not entirely expert information would be helpful.
It sounded very sounds like an accurate. I would have never questioned a single thing you said.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I feel like you laid the perfect foundation for explaining things start to finish. You really walked us through. You did a really good job. I feel like this is not your first time explaining the things.
Something so tells us it's not your first
good time. Job of like walking us through the experience, what we can expect, what it's good for. I feel like I have a really good understanding, and I probably won't make so many jokes about, you know, Coachella going forward. You know, I feel like that's where people really, that's like the, when they think about psychedelics, they think about Coachella. Now we're going to think about Field Trip. So you're welcome, guys. Yeah. We just flipped your brain right there.
Changed your mindset.
Perfect. I remember, I went to Woodstock 99. So the 25th anniversary or whatever it was, 30th anniversary of Woodstock. And I remember my buddy who was there with, and I was still pretty drug naive at the time, found a little baggie of LSD tabs. And I was shocked. I was like, people don't actually do that, do they? How naive I was.
Yeah, that's like definitely where they do that.
Very much so. Very much so.
For sure.
Elsie, it sounded like you had one more question, but I was
just kind of just see where, I mean, I really want to know just kind of what you talked about, you know, Field Trip a little bit more and just kind of hear more about that and how people can find you, all that good stuff. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right. I'll try to keep it brief. So with Field Trip, we're doing two things primarily. One is we're building out the clinics to actually deliver psychedelic assisted therapies at scale. Cause like I mentioned before, this is not something you want to do in a hospital or your typical doctor's office, right? They're typically long experiences. I mean, ketamine's relatively short as a psychedelic compared to say psilocybin. You know, psilocybin experience is 4, 6, 8, 10 hours. Mm-hmm. Ketamine is pretty reliably 1 hour to 1.5 hours. But you know, your typical doctor is not going to have the therapist present. They're not going to have the nice, comfortable space and all that kind of stuff. So that's why we're building out our Field Trip health centers, because we need this space. You know, we haven't really talked that much about the evidence around psychedelic therapies, but like what we're seeing is MDMA and phase 3 MDMA assisted therapy trials showed that 3 sessions of MDMA assisted therapy cured, and I put that in quotes and I'll explain why, 70% of participants from their PTSD. After 3 MDMA assisted therapy sessions, they no longer had PTSD. Up until that point, there is still no approved drug for PTSD worldwide. Up until that point, doctors sought to try and get to 30% improvement in symptoms, right? So we're talking about 30% improvement in symptoms or a 70% effective cure rate. That's how powerful psychedelic assisted therapies are. With psilocybin, we've seen studies suggesting that the antidepressant effects of a single psilocybin assisted therapy session can last for up to 5 years, right? So with the ketamine, we're talking about like a month, a couple of months. Mm-hmm. With psilocybin, it could be up to 5 years that people, you know, have substantially reduced depression symptoms. I won't say a cure, but you know, if there's anything looking like a cure, that sure sounds like one to me. Yeah. And so these are really potent medicines, and they're coming. Now, where it's a couple years away before MDMA and maybe 4 to 5 before psilocybin are approved medications.
Nice.
But the space doesn't exist, right?
Medical. You know?
For medical application, for treating depression and anxiety and PTSD and other things. They're also being studied for things like migraines. If either of you suffer migraines, 100 milligrams of psilocybin is the best migraine medication I've ever taken. So you don't even really feel it. Like, it's a small enough dose that you don't feel super high, but it knocks the migraine out immediately. And that's not just anecdotal. There's a lot of evidence suggesting that psilocybin and tryptamines are great for migraines. So there's a lot of excitement, but because you can't do this in a conventional doctor's office, the impact that can be achieved from psychedelic therapies isn't going to happen unless you build out the space to make it happen. And so that's what we're doing with Field Trip Health. We're building out that space, starting with ketamine-assisted therapies, but as MDMA and psilocybin become legal, we'll start using those as well. Mm-hmm. On the other side, thank you. On the other side of the equation, as awesome as psilocybin is, it's really long, right? It's a really long time frame. And that's what makes it so expensive. Because if you imagine, you got to be in a space for probably 8 hours. You need a doctor probably present. You need one or two therapists present for 8 hours. You can start to see how this adds up to become very expensive, mm-hmm. not just in terms of out of pocket, but you're taking at least a day off work as well. You know, it's a big commitment. And so what we're doing is we're also working on developing new psychedelic molecules. Our first one, which is called FT-104, is like psilocybin. So subjectively, it feels very much like psilocybin. Objectively, it hits the same receptors in the brain, but it has a 2 to 3 hour time frame, not a 4 to 6 hour one. So you're cutting the time frame in half without, hopefully, I mean, the data will bear this out, reducing the therapeutic experience. So, you know, we talk about psychedelics and everyone thinks about the classic psychedelics, but I think the future of the psychedelic industry and the future of psychedelic medicine is in next generation psychedelic drugs like FT-104. They don't have the same, you know, colorful history that may attract people, but if we think about it purely in the medical context, mm-hmm. this is where the future will be. And so that's what we're doing at Field Trip. And then, you know, we've got the app as well, because we realize as much
as
this is,
as soon as I leave here,
I'll send you the link. As much as this is going to start as a medical phenomenon, it's certainly going to become a cultural phenomenon, you know, in the '60s, you know, it's sad that the psychedelics left the lab and went mainstream, and that's mm-hmm. what triggered the counterculture and the hippie movement. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Julie Holland on our podcast a few weeks ago, and she's like, I don't know why everyone vilifies the hippies. The hippies were right, you know, in terms of like their mindset, their attitude, like environmental movement, human rights. It's like the hippies had a lot going for them. And so I certainly see the same thing happening now, that as much as this is a medical scientific thing that's happening, it's going to have a very significant cultural impact as well. And so with Trip, we're really trying to help breed a very healthy, thoughtful kind of community around psychedelics in a non-medical context. And so if people are interested in learning more, fieldtriphealth.com is the website for our clinics. At Field Trip Health is for is our socials on Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. We're a publicly traded company. And I don't know if you saw, but Senator Tom Daschle just joined us as a special advisor. So, you know, we're starting to speak at sort of senior political levels as well, which is cool. But as a publicly traded company, if you're interested from an investment perspective, meet Field Trip is our website, meetfieldtrip.com. And then if you're interested in Trip, the website is tripapp.co, tripapp.co. And I think it's trip_app on various socials for that.
Okay. Awesome.
That's a lot. Sorry about that.
No,
that's perfect. Yeah. That's like exactly what we needed.
I just downloaded the app too. So
you're like on it. Give the perfect explanation.
Thank you. I've done this a few times these days.
So you got it down pat.
But you don't do it in a robotic way. I feel like, you know, this it feels like very, you know, the first time, but not
No, yeah. I mean, I love all this. I feel like if I was in the 60s, 70s era, I definitely would have drank Kool-Aid on the hippie side of it.
Well, I think podcasting in general. Not too late. Yeah, right. Yeah. So like I think podcasting in general, just having more authentic educational conversations regarding psychedelics has changed the culture around it itself. People are much more open to just understanding the science behind it. So I think just even in the last 12, 18 months, I have seen, and maybe it's because of who I follow, but I have seen an exponential growth across the board of just like more acceptance that it could be helpful for things such as mental health issues, just overall lifestyle, getting your shit together kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, also too, I mean, I don't know if you are into like astrology that much, but we are coming into the age of Aquarius, which is a real good time for all of this stuff to hit. And if, I mean, really in the last, like what Tiffany was saying, I think honestly that I've seen it in the last, like a shift in maybe like the last year or 2 years, maybe of, you know, friends I never thought would be into this kind of stuff are definitely getting more like spiritual, you know, more into like the metaphysical kind of, you know, things. And so people are more interested in hearing these things. They're more open to, even something as basic as astrology is like not getting written off as like, okay, you know, whatever. It's more than just a little thing on Cosmo magazine. It's like, you know, there actually is the science too. And people are like,
well, astrology is science, but
oh, for sure. For sure. I think that everyone's getting into all this kind of stuff. And I think it's naturally going to progress into, you know, hopefully in the US, well, at least get cannabis like recreationally legalized soon. I hope they don't leave it up to the states, because I feel like I don't have much hope for Georgia where we're at right now to legalize that recreationally, even though money-wise, hello, we can tax the crap out of it. But I do think that is the kind of natural progression of things in the next like few years. So I'm really excited to kind of see where this, you know, takes off. And the fact that you guys are in Atlanta too is awesome. Like I would have never expected something like that to be in Georgia at all. Or like in the South, really. So
yeah, absolutely. And that's what's so cool about ketamine. Yeah. It's like people don't think about it, but it's perfectly legal. So we can do it everywhere. I haven't been there, but from what I've seen, the clinic, which is at the, what's it called? It's that old building that they just repurposed, not the Stockyards. I'll find the name of it. Anyway. Oh.
I'm not sure.
Beautiful. It is a extremely beautiful clinic. Everyone who's been there is like, this place is amazing. It's really magical. All of our clinics are beautiful, but apparently that one is up there. And the one in the Netherlands that's opening up in the next couple of months overlooks the river. It looks pretty spectacular as well.
Oh, that sounds very cool.
I mean, I'll take a field trip to the Netherlands.
There you go.
Same. I have a lot of big trips coming up, but Netherlands is not on the list.
Both physically and metaphysically, right?
Yeah. Right. We can go to the Atlanta one and pretend we're in the Netherlands.
There you go. I'll ask the therapy team to put on a Dutch accent for you just to make it a full experience.
Thank you so much.
You're just a connector, a master connector.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming on here, talking to us about this, debunking some, you know, some myths, some rumors about this kind of, you know, therapy. I'm really excited for people to hear this and kind of be able to educate themselves and find you and download this app, especially. I downloaded it earlier in the podcast when you mentioned it. So I'm really excited to dive into that, but thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I mean, this is how we change the world, is having, you know, real conversations and having people like, don't need to convince anybody. I just need, you know, we just need people to ask the question, being like, oh, I want to understand more about it. And just briefly, it's like in the last 50 years, we've been so focused on achieving science and technological breakthroughs, which has been incredibly positive. I mean, we live in a world where less people are hungry, you know, poverty is at all time lows, but in the pursuit of technology, we've lost meaning. And so like talking about astrology is wonderful. If it gives people meaning, great. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. You know, as long as it doesn't replace reason, you know, and what Erwin, what Erwin talks about, the person I've worked with, not in psychedelics, but for my own therapeutic growth and personal growth, is like, true intelligence is the perfect meshing of emotion and logic. You can't sacrifice one for the other. I'm perfectly guilty of always putting logic over emotion. That's been like my horse to die on sort of thing. Same. But finding that kind of perfect of trusting your instincts, trusting your emotions, but not sacrificing your logic and vice versa is really what we want to achieve. And I think psychedelics are a great ticket to opening people up to understanding that on a much more real basis.
Love as that. Soon as we get off here, I'm figuring out where I can go, what I can do.
She's going to the dark web. I'm just kidding. just kidding. But I mean, I guess we can just wrap it up here now. So we gave you permission to enter, Ronan, and now you have permission to exit.
Yeah, we came a long way. That's what's
song say, and I could do all things. I could do all things. Yeah, I could do all things. Yeah, yeah, we came a long way. That's what the song say, and I could do all things. I could do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. I'm not afraid of the moment. I'm not afraid. I can't hold it. I gotta show them. Gotta get up in the morning. I gotta do it for Kobe. Lately I'm zoning. Lately I know where I'm going. Taking whatever control is. Show me opponents. Show me opponents. I got a gift and I'm starting to own it. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. And I can do all things. And I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. Shout to the city that raised me. Shout to the people that made me. I'm from the 80s. I don't think mumbling wavy. I grew up like on a Jay-Z. Maybe I'm crazy. I ain't been wondering lately. Feel like it's there for the taking. Feel like I'm good with the changes. Know who I am, and that's the most dangerous statement. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. Man, I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. I check the scoreboard. Know what I'm good for. When I check the scoreboard, man, I'm thinking 2-4. Man, that's what I'm good for. Yeah, yeah. When I check the scoreboard, I know what I'm good for. When I check the scoreboard, man, I think I'm 2-4. And I know what I'm good for. Yeah, yeah. Cause we came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. I can do all things. Yeah, yeah. We came a long way, and that's what the song say. And I can do all things. I can do all things. Man, I can do all things. Yeah, yeah.